Welcome to the Corporate Corner. My name is Mats Andersson.
And I'm Mary Green Anderson.
We'll share with you conversations with people from around the world about their corporate experiences.
At TCC, we look forward to together creating community.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Corporate Corner. My name is Mats Andersson and I'm your host today, and we have our first French guest, Camille Bonneau. I wanted to have a French guest for a long time, and Camille and I talked, I think it's nearly 1.5 years ago, that we should do an episode, and it took this long time. Wow, time is flying. And yeah, Camille has an interesting background. He's a lawyer and grew up in southwest of France, traveled a lot around Europe, lived in Denmark, studied in Denmark, and now living in Czech Republic, working for an American company. And we talk a lot about France, the French elite schools, the impact that has on society, and the courses, the curriculum you need to have, which is very straight-lined in France, where you finish your high school, you try to integrate the grandes écoles, the elite schools, and you can't really miss it with a year because then it's too late. And comparison with the Nordic countries, where there's a more chance of getting a second chance in life. We talk about language challenges, the different corporate culture, how it is to working in an American company, and yeah, really thrilled to have Camille on today and share this episode with you. So, without further ado, here comes Camille Bonneau. So, welcome Camille to the Corporate Corner.
Thanks for the invitation.
I'm so happy to have our first French guest on the show. That is great.
Well, yeah, happy to be the first one. Delighted.
Yeah, because I mean, it's funny. I've done a lot with Americans and Swedes and Germans, because that was my closest connection. Since a lot of people reaching out, but my French connection is very strong, as I've been more or less living and working in a French environment for at least 15, 20 years of my life. So I'm curious to segue into that later. But maybe a couple of words about you. Who is Camille Bonneau? Okay. I don't know if I pronounce it right even.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm rather young. I mean, I think my social background, my youth, didn't really. I wasn't supposed to be to have such an expat life, I would say. So my family is originally from Carcassonne, not far from Toulouse.
Southwest France.
It's a very nice city in the southwest, I would say, of France. And I grew up in Béziers, which is about 100 kilometers away from Carcassonne. I would say rather touristic, lots of sun, lots of tourism. But I would say the local economy is not really exposed to the international life. And anything but tourism is kind of, unusual, I would say.
This is really the La France profonde. So this is really the real, real France down in southwest.
In a way, yes. I mean, there are driving industries, like obviously in Toulouse, aerospace, aviation is very, very strong because of Airbus and all the companies around this business. Montpellier is also I would say there are a couple of companies thriving, like Sanofi, for instance. But both Montpellier and Toulouse are kind of full students.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's when you want to look for a job when you graduate, it's not that easy.
Where did you study?
So I went to elementary school, high school in Béziers, and then at the age of 18 with a baccalaureate, I went to Narbonne, which is part of the University of Perpignan, so northern part of Catalonia.
Yeah.
And after a bachelor's degree in law, so 3 years, I went to Perpignan, where I studied economic law for a master's degree. And I remember at the age of, let's say, 12, 13, I had in mind the idea of completing my studies abroad and maybe, well, try my luck and start my career abroad.
Yeah,
But I didn't really have any idea where.
why did you want that? Because that's quite unusual in France, and maybe more now, but at least previously it was less common, at least.
Well, at the age of nine, and it probably, when looking back, it really was a game changer. I joined a choir, and well, I was lucky enough to be in a choir that was very good. I mean, like in terms of performances, was really, I would say, top notch, and I'm really grateful. And we went on tour a couple of times. I mean, so we went to Spain, Italy a few times, the Czech Republic, Poland, back in 2001. In 1999, at the age when I was 13, we went to Canada. So yeah, this
So
really.
what was that a sports game? I didn't get if it was a
No,
sport.
in a choir. So choir singing. So
And of course singing. Okay, now I get it. Okay. I was
yeah.
totally getting it wrong. Okay, I was yeah, okay. So that allowed you to travel as a 9-year-old already.
So at the age of nine, I remember the first tour we did, it was in Barcelona, so just for a weekend. But I touched for the very first time the traveling abroad, and interfering, interacting with the foreign elements, which is I was very curious, and I think it's I'm genuinely a curious person. And from there, I felt like very attracted. So yeah.
So how did that what so now you are in Czech Republic, Prague.
That's correct. So just to go back to my studies. So in 2009, I completed my studies abroad. I went to Denmark. I was supposed to spend 5 months in Denmark, and eventually it was 5 years. So I studied law at the University of Copenhagen, Faculty of Law, which is a tremendous experience, definitely a milestone. And after working at the World Health Organization for 6 months as an intern, I joined the French-Danish Chamber of Commerce. I also worked in parallel in a small Danish firm, law firm. And and after that, I also learned Danish and worked in a bit in a school in parallel. After that, after 5 years, I had enough of Denmark, and I wanted to change. I wanted to have a different experience. So I moved to Bratislava, Slovakia, and for a very brief period of time, and eventually I moved to Prague in October 2014. So yeah,
And you were
ever
there ever
since.
since. And now you're working for a law firm there, or?
No, now I work for an American company, a small company called Honeywell.
Oh, okay.
I guess a lot of people were actually going to listen to
So you work
this program.
on their legal affairs department then, or?
That's correct. That's correct. I joined Honeywell last year in June, and to work in for Honeywell Aerospace, as a licensing contract manager. So basically be in charge of all the licensing agreement for Honeywell Aerospace.
So the role is broader than only working with Czech Republic, or is this kind of a global?
Oh yes, definitely a global exposure. So I work with Asia Pacific, Europe, Middle East, Africa, India, and also the Americas.
So this is a shared service center that Honeywell has set up in Czech Republic, or?
Kind of, I wouldn't say a shared service center because it's more for Honeywell. It's definitely a legal hub for Europe. Yeah. So we're about 45 legal professionals in this hub.
Okay, wow. Okay. Well, interesting. So you have a multitude of experiences, both French, Slovakian, Scandinavian, and now American. So let's dive into some observations you have done on that journey. I'm curious to hear that. When you came to Denmark, for example, even if it was more in a student role, what struck you specifically with that Danish society compared to France?
In the first place, I could talk about the academic perspective, but in the first place, as a student, I was very surprised by the number of classes we had. Generally, in France, if you're a student, well, you tend to have, let's say, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different topics in the whole semester. And in Denmark, I remember I only had 3. So it would be 3 times 2 or 3 hours per week. So coming from France, it was like, yeah, kind of ridiculously small. But I got to know very quickly that you had to be prepared. First and foremost, you had to read all the corpus, which sometimes is about 1,000 pages all in all for the whole semester for one topic. And in France, when you follow a lecture, you tend to listen to the professor and don't ask questions. Whereas in Denmark, the lecturer, can be an academic or an external lecturer, a professional, let's say an attorney at law. The person comes and it's kind of looking into the details of the topic, the corpus given, the material, and then there are some sort of question and answers. So it's very intense. And if you're not prepared, it's kind of useless to go to the lecturer.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So is it more interactive than in France, or?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think as a student back then, I definitely noticed lots of. The Danish system was very much complementary to the French system, because in France you receive a lot of information, but you have to process a lot of stuff. And in Denmark, you really have to use your brain after you reading the material.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed that actually when I worked in a school in Copenhagen, that at a very early age, the kids, the pupils, are asked to come out with solutions. So all in all, I would say, after 5 years in Denmark, and this is the conclusion my personal conclusion about the Danish society, the Danes, but I think it could apply to all the Nordic people, that they're very pragmatic. So they have an issue, they have a problem, and they feel the need to come out with a solution.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think agree with that from what I've seen as well. It's less theoretical, and it's really, yeah, we have a problem, let's fix it. Whereas in France, you go through the thesis, antithesis, synthesis process.
Yeah, And it's gotta be much about the rules sometimes. So we are very much focused about the how to achieve the process, the methodology, and in the Nordic countries, I think that there are, as part of the group of the community, you need to come out with your solution, and you need to take a lot of responsibilities. So this sense of responsibility, I think it's taught at a very early age. In France, I wouldn't say people are taught to take responsibilities and come up with solutions. But I'm not saying, like, you know, the Nordic system is better. I mean,
no, I mean, I think it's complementary or different. Yes, I think all systems are working somehow. I mean, and at the end, it depends on what is the most important. Is it to have wealthy people or happy people or whatever? I mean, I know that the Nordic countries come quite high out on the kind of happiness index and all these things, but at the same time, maybe they are for sure lacking other things, which could also be climate wise. I don't know. I mean, that shapes the character.
Yes, yes. I mean, I've typically what surprises me is very often, and you're right, when you look at all the indexes. From the United Nations, OECD, the Nordic countries are always rank very high, at the very top most of the time. But in France, people try to get inspired. There is always a guy who says, "Oh, look at the Nordic countries, are so cool. You know, they do so much better when it comes to the welfare system, to unemployment, the employment system, how to handle unemployment, and so on and so on." And then in the Nordic countries, very often they say, "Oh yeah, but you know, south of France is so cool. The food is so good. There is so much sun."
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I talked to one of the first podcasts. I talked to a person in Sweden we were talking about that there's always also a big problem that a lot of people are not happy. So this happiness index, I always question it, whether how true it is. I don't know about the Danes. They seem a little bit happier than Swedes, maybe, but I don't know. Because you have everything is provided for you, as you said. The government takes care basically of healthcare and childcare and unemployment or sickness leave or whatever. So, and it's a very secularized country. So the people need to find their meaning of life somewhere else. And I'm not sure that is always achieved. So I agree
in a way. And this is one of the reasons why I left the country. When I left Denmark and Scandinavia, I was just 28. And after 5 years in this society, I really liked it. But at some point, I felt like, you know, I was 28 and I was full of energy, looking for a challenge. And I would say it's too good to be true in a way. It's too perfect. It's too perfect. You know, at the society level, if there are problems, I mean, the state provides it all, and if you're, let's say, looking for a bit of adventure, a bit of a mess, try to face some danger. I mean, this is a big word, but some adventure. You need to try something else. You need to travel a bit or go outside of the country to experience what's out there. So this is one of the reasons why I moved to Central Europe, because this is one of the regions of Europe that is really facing lots of challenges the past 30 years in Central and Eastern Europe. I mean, especially Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary. I mean, since the end of the of communism and the Iron Curtain. I mean, this is a region that has faced tremendous challenges. I mean, like, yeah. Economic. I mean, the way capitalism, liberalism has sharpened those countries is kind of disturbing sometimes.
Yeah, but, I agree. I mean, it's a tremendous vibe in Prague, I can say, after having been there for 10 years. It is very dynamic. I don't know how it's in now with everything is changing a little bit with post-COVID and how countries are impacted. But one thing, coming back to what you said, the surprising thing I noticed in my new job, I noticed that Sweden is really on the top edge of startup companies. It's a huge startup scene where I think some say it's after Silicon Valley. Sweden is the place, or around in some areas in Stockholm. So it's a lot of young people who are trying their chance and not going this traditional route that was what was made in. Where you have everything taken care of, that they take risks. So there is, I think, a new trend emerging from these countries as well. But at the same time, it's fantastic to have a lot of things covered, even if it's kind of less the providential state than it was like 20 years ago. Now it's changing even in the Nordic countries, I would say. But I think one thing is clearly that the hierarchies are so much flatter in the Scandinavian countries, and even compared to a traditional central European company, like in Czech Republic, France or Germany, they're much more hierarchical. And I think that is the biggest thing that struck me when moving out. And I guess even if you're living in that environment, it's also very, it must have struck you that it's much flatter. Even in the university, I'm sure that you were closer to the Danish lecturers and professors than in France, where they are more on a pedestal teaching.
Academic. Yeah, I mean, from just a personal point of view, I mean, I feel like the Scandinavian, maybe in a way, Dutch, German conception of the organizations, it can be in companies. This flat hierarchy is more something I relate to, because it's about taking initiatives, identifying the problems, lots of respect and trust. And I like Nordic countries because people just assume that the neighbor, the nobody in the street, you can trust this person. And I feel like in France, for instance, unfortunately, maybe it's a question of size of the population, maybe it's a question of historical issues, I don't know. Unfortunately, I haven't really studied the problem, but it seems like in France and Southern Europe, for instance, in Italy, in Greece, people don't really trust each other, and they don't trust the state eventually. And they have issues, if you look at on a higher scale, they have issues with when it comes to paying tax and how much and what they can expect from the state. And I find it very unfortunate.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, and I know that. I think France is particular in that. In France, people really don't trust each other when you're out on the street. That's clearly there's always a mistrust. The first thing, that's my feeling. I mean, here in California, it's also very similar to that people trust each other in outside very naturally. But I would say that was pre-COVID. Post-COVID, there's a big you suspect everything of bringing you the pest and cholera, but that might change again. But I remember one thing that struck me when I came to France. You talked about taxes, and when we grew up, we were kind of taught on how to answer the phone. that you should always, with this heavy landlines, you should always say your name. So I said, oh, Mats Andersson, when you answer. And then the other person should present themselves. But then I came to France. Nobody's answering with a name. You just say, hello. And then I was told that this is because you never know if it's the tax authorities calling, and you should never tell who you are, so you can just figure out and say wrong number and hang up. And I realized that starts the mistrust. You never tell who you, so calling a French company, it is like the biggest most complicated thing you can do, because that's true.
That's true. I agree. I was maybe lucky, but my father always made a point to force me to interest myself when I picked up the phone.
Oh wow, well, that must be a French exception.
Yeah, probably. But my father has always been a very sales person. I really admire him because he's very good at when it comes to interacting with people and building a relationship based on trust.
Yeah.
And I really like that. But when it comes to introducing yourself, you break the ice. And it's something that I find, more rare, I would say. Yeah, you're right. In France, it's kind of, this is vanishing, yeah.
And in France, it's also funny because let's talk a couple of minutes about that, because the school, your title is so important, and not necessarily the title you have in a company, but which school you have made. I remember once when my older daughter was small, and a friend came home to the house, and she introduced herself for the first time, and she said, "Is she fait Dauphine?" And I was thinking, "What is that?" And it's just like this is one of these prestigious universities in Paris, and I mean I couldn't care less. But for her, it was very important that she had made the Dauphine University. I thought it was like more like some fish or whatever, so some plate to eat. tell us a little bit about the Les Grandes Écoles in France that are very important and how that works.
Yeah, of course. I might sound a bit tough, but I'm not from one of those prestigious grandes écoles. Sciences Po, HEC, Haute École de Commerce, Paris Dauphine, and so on. Yeah, those are very prestigious business schools or engineering schools. And people very much care about that. I mean, when you have a CV, I mean, you better have those names on your CV, because if those lines are missing, then you're not on the top of the pile for recruiters. And which is, in my eyes, kind of unfortunate, because very often human resources, professionals, well, they tend to care about more about the this kind of network rather than the person they have behind the CV. I mean, so I think in my case now it's kind of different because of plenty of years of expatriation, but I made it to some very nice company names like Honeywell or IBM. I even integrated a couple of law firms in the Czech Republic and in Denmark, but they didn't care much about those big names on my CV, but they really cared more about my personality, my experience. But I find it a real issue for the labor market in France, because we've got every year thousands and thousands of graduates, and not all of them are from those elite schools, big names, and they cannot even find internships. And without an internship, you can't really start your career. So it's kind of like a vicious circle. I mean, you don't really have access to the nice employers, and then because you didn't have, I mean, because you don't have those elite schools names on your CV, then you cannot join the Big Four or the French blue chips. So and then yeah, after let's say 5-10 years in the labor market, then you're gradually kicked out of the real good opportunities, because yeah, at the age of 30-35 it's already too late to join the very good companies. And so it's kind of, I find it a bit too rigid.
Well, it's a system that works, but it doesn't work at the same time. So I mean, the whole French society is built on that you from a very early age, like an early age, I say, like from 4 or 5 years old, you get trained that this is school and this is how you behave, and then you go through it. So if you have this streamlined process, you go through it and you do a grand école and everything is fine. And but if you are somehow different and everybody is kind of, I think, maturing in different, some people want to take a break after high school, and but that doesn't work. You need to be really streamlined, so you come at 23, 24, you're out of these schools. So if you have any difference in the curriculum that you want to travel 1 year, then it just breaks the whole system, and then you're kind of, then you're out. But it works, because these big French firms, they can hire from these schools. I mean, I've seen these kids coming out of Polytechnique, and they are brilliant. They are really brilliant. But at the same time, you lock the door for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the pros in this system, one of the pros can be that this system, this whole educational system, is based on meritocracy. So at a very early age, you are supposed to handle the marks. So you need to have good grades so that you can be on the top of the ranking at school. So it's very important at the age of 6, 7, 8. There is a ranking. You need to have good grades. And that's very, very, this is very given at a very early age. So this culture of performance is deep in our roots. But once in a while, and maybe more and more, people are actually not really, who actually mature at a later age, who actually are able to find their way later on. I'm also thinking, like, you know, like jobs like carpenters or you know, craftsmen. There are less and less people like that, and they're more and more needed, because, you know, those jobs are simply considered as, you know, second class, secondary.
In France is one of the places on earth what I've seen. You really feel this second class. You can really feel it so well.
Yeah, and that's I find it a pity. But you know, if you look at the history of the French economy, I mean, we definitely have this culture of craftsmanship. Like, you know, if you look at all the large international luxurious brands, I mean, they are originally based on this culture of, you know, doing well with your hands. And now it's I mean, sometimes it's not really looked at as a fancy way, as a fancy path.
But also, one thing I also noticed that when you do this grants they call these elite schools, you can quickly merge into a management position. So basically you're out there and you can be a manager. And you have no skills whatsoever of people, unless you are have kind of studied that or lived that somehow. But you are in general you're a scientific mind who has who are brilliant. But it doesn't. I don't think it's optimal probably for people management always. And sometimes you need more time to be comfortable in people management, and that I think could create, I would guess that some of them are quite insecure leaders when they are very young, and
possibly
and it's not necessarily creating the best working atmospheres. I'm I can only speculate here, and I've seen some examples of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One of the things I remember from Denmark and Scandinavia is this the way the speed on of people of students the way they I mean education and students to make it simple. So I've got the feeling I remember kids were like 13, 15, 17 who actually didn't really know what to do when it came to the field of studies, but it wasn't a real big deal for them. I mean, there is no I don't remember seeing so much social pressure pressure from the family to push the kids to select, you know, a scientific way or a more intellectual, like literature path, or it's not a big deal. And I remember going to university with seeing people were like 20, 21, 22, and just enrolling law school, which in France is completely unthinkable because, you know, if you start law school at the age of 20, people look at you and are like, well, what went wrong?
Yeah.
Because you're so behind.
Yeah.
And I remember going to university with a good friend of mine, Charlie, who actually happens to be Swedish from Stockholm. Yeah, he told me, man, no problem. I mean, I'm just 3-4 years older, and I'm just about to finish my law studies. But you know what? I did X many jobs, you know, working in a flower shop, in a supermarket, and so on and so on. And then I remember when I selected law, I knew I wanted to study law and wanted to become an attorney at law or a legal counsel in a company. And this is what I wanted. Whereas in France, I remember looking at it and say, well, you know, how many students actually enroll, let's say, pharmaceutical science, sociology, law, name it. And after 1 or 2 years, they just realize, oh, this is definitely not what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I think in a higher scale, for the society, what do we want? This is the big question. Do we want students who actually take a path because they really want it, and this is eventually economically more beneficial? Or do we want to have as many students graduating every school as soon as possible, every year as soon as possible, and just make the numbers and eventually have people actually just frustrated? They just decided to study law, medicine, and they just stuck with the career, and they highly regret it sometimes.
So it's difficult to know exactly what you want. I mean, some people, they know it for clear, and if you're lucky, it turns out well, and you end up doing something you like. But what I kind of like in the Nordic societies is this notion of second chance. You can start over. I mean, one of my best friends, he was a truck driver for between 20 and 30, and then he decided, oh, and he's a smart guy, and he said, 30, he decided, oh, I should study something. He went to university, and now he's an HR specialist. I mean, you wouldn't see that in France. I mean, it doesn't exist. You can't start, like, study at 30 and completely convert from being a truck driver. That notion is not existing.
I find it marvelous. This idea of, you know, yeah, there is always a backup solution. There is always a second chance. I mean, after a few years in this field, yeah, you can completely change, and that's okay. I find it acceptable.
Yeah,
no. I remember interviewing for a Danish company in Jylland,
yeah,
not far from Aalborg. And the HR person I met, I mean, this guy spent probably 10 or 15 years working for the Danish police and eventually joined human resources for this international company. And I found it, wow, this would be impossible in France, or close to impossible in France. So, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think in France, my view is that it's a little bit... there's a view that things are really it's difficult to do some jobs, but most things it's not that difficult. So most people, a lot of people can do a lot of things if they really want to do it, and if they invest in it. It's most things are not rocket science. but I mean it works somehow for France. But what I think economically maybe doing somehow good, but I think that there is an underlying frustration and a lot of unhappiness in the amongst the population. So it's I'm not sure if it's the best. And I also think France has a lot of extremely sharp minds. So I think and there is a lot of innovation coming from France, but I think it could be much more coming out. If you see what's coming out of the US, which is of course a bigger country, but France could have been more active in the innovation scene over the last 20 years, knowing the knowledge that is there. In the new economy, that I'm pretty sure.
I agree. Without doing any politics here, I mean, but just
we can do politics. We can do politics. It's allowed.
but what I've noticed, and one of the major comparisons we could do with Germany, for instance, because you know the French and France is all very often compared, and we French people like to compare ourselves with the Germans.
Yeah, I know.
If you look at the organization of the country, Germany is obviously made of federalism, lots of Länder, so different economic capitals or different centers like Düsseldorf, Munich, Berlin, Frankfurt, obviously, Stuttgart. Things happen at the regional scale, whereas in France, obviously, everything is politically, economically, financially very much centralized. And this is, in my eyes, going wrong direction. Because if we are able, and it seems like, you know, Emmanuel Macron has decided to strengthen this movement, but we definitely need to play more with the regional capitals. If you look at France, I mean, it's an enormous country. It's like probably it's the largest European country after the Ukraine in terms of superficy. But we have great cities like Lille, Lyon, Marseille, Montpellier, Toulouse, Bordeaux, Rennes, Nantes, just to name a few. People are super smart over there, you know, believe me. I remember 3-4 years ago when I worked for a Czech law firm with offices in the whole Central and Eastern Europe. I went to those cities and spoke to a lot of law firms, even chambers of commerce. And when you speak with those people about, you ask them, okay, what's going on here? What are the key industries? What are the numbers? People tell you, well, in Lyon, in Rhône-Alpes, in this whole region, well, they tell you and they say, well, we have pretty much everything from steel production to plastic to automotive to finance, everything, IT, name it. And this is incredible. And you know, I mentioned earlier, there's an introduction that Toulouse is very strong in when it comes to aerospace. The food industry is extremely developed in Occitanie. So in Marseille, obviously, yeah, there is a port, one of the main ports of Europe. But I got to know recently that Marseille is very, very strong when it comes to internet infrastructure. So every single regional capital has to unlock the potential.
I'm curious to see how that will go in France, because it is as you say, it's so centralized from the education system, where really everything is decided in Paris, and it's ruled out to all kids, and even the French schools abroad, exactly the same program. So on the one hand, it makes it easy because it's centralized. I think it's enough to look at the TGV, the fast trains, in the high-speed trains in France. If you look on how that network is going, this is how France is structured. All high-speed line is going via Paris somehow. Even if it's connect dot A to B on the west coast, let's go via Paris to change trains and then go south. So I think it's a good illustration on how it's structured. I'm curious to see if they can change that and give more regional autonomy. I'm not so sure.
Whether politically in France our decision makers will have the courage to take radical, drastic decisions, but I think this is the essence of the dynamic of the European Union. I mean, you just can't forbid people, let's say, in the Basque Country, so southwest, to interact with their neighbors on the other side of the Pyrenees. Yeah. So in Biarritz, Bayonne, even Bordeaux, those people are more interacting with people in Bilbao, San Sebastian, you know, than in Paris sometimes, I would say. And it's the same, you know, in Toulouse, in Montpellier. I mean, we're more attracted to Barcelona people than rather sometimes to Paris people.
Yeah.
So this is the dynamic. If you look at Strasbourg and Germany, I mean, it's very well connected. Lille and Brussels, I mean, I remember taking the high speed train in Brussels, and half an hour later I was in Lille. So this is incredible, and I can even speak about Lyon. Lyon is very well connected to Turin, and this is the way.
Yeah, no, let's hope that they can find a dynamic model there. I mean, centralized is also working fine for some things. It's always a trade off. What is best at the moment. But let's talk a couple of minutes about your current role then, and the American management culture, American corporate culture. How is that going?
Oh well, it's another. I would say it's closer to the French mentality, the conception of the structure of French companies. I would say it's very vertical, but I'm talking about, you know, Honeywell. So
yeah,
it's very much. Top management decides something and it's got to be implemented. But it's also result driven. So it's very much about, you know, how much value you're bringing to this company. So obviously money, but also how much can you improve this or that? How well are you improving the processes for this and that? Working capital, for instance. So it's very direct, but yeah, you need to be prepared.
Don't
get rough.
Yeah, I mean, it's financially, I guess they're thriving, so that is working. If that's always a key parameter. You can't have a floating organization where everybody decides what they want to do and they make no profit. Doesn't work either.
Very vertical, very direct, straight to the point. And even as a Frenchman, sometimes I find it a bit difficult to handle the corporate culture, but also the communication, you know, what's written, but also the meaning of the words.
Yeah, in what way?
Well,
maybe if we just take an example, like, you know, as a European, if I mean, an American person uses interesting, it doesn't always mean interesting and literally. It's you should spend some time on it. Sometimes it means like, well, you know, that was interesting what you brought, but we're not really going to take your opinion into consideration.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So.
Yeah. No, I think the small cultural and language differences is subliminal but very important. We all think we speak so good English, but then when you really work with native English people, you realize that you struggle to keep up with all these small notions. I found it easier to learn French and live and work in a French environment than English. English is such a large language, whereas French is so easy once you crack the code, because everybody is saying the same thing all the time. So it's much easier, I think. But it's difficult.
Yeah, well, it's all about it's what I found beautiful in this expat life and this cultural management, multicultural management, that's handling this diversity is. First and foremost, you learn a lot every day.
Yeah.
And even if you think you take something for granted, sometimes like the situation show you that you got it totally wrong. But you need to be flexible and humble as well, because sometimes you may judge a behavior in a completely wrong way. I mean, you mentioned the French culture. As a French person, and especially when I'm in France, I'm always very happy when a foreigner speaks French, because they make the effort. So they play on our turf and they try to play by our rules. And I find it very courageous. So I like it. I'm more entitled to open the door to a foreigner who speaks French. So I find it great. But yeah, sometimes it's tricky, because it's difficult to not to fall into the trap of when a foreigner speaks French, it's very often, I mean, sometimes, not very often, sometimes difficult to bear in mind that this person didn't go to a French school or may not possess all the cultural codes, you know.
Yeah.
When it comes to communication, when it comes to having lunch, having a coffee break, dining, and so on and so on, you know. It's like coffee breaks or small talks are extremely important in France. I mean, you need to have a conversation about your previous weekend, speak about football, politics, and all those things, which abroad, like for instance in the Nordic countries or in Central Europe, it's not always, you know, the big thing.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think my feeling of Sweden is that we talk, but it's because I'm from there, so I talked with people about everything. So I don't really know how you would perceive it, but it's true, and also in France, I think that has changed slightly now. There's a less patience for someone not speaking really good French. I mean, when I came in the late 80s to France, nobody spoke English. It was like impossible, and then when you try to speak in French, nobody really wanted to speak, because you couldn't speak good enough, and And French are not that used to hear different dialects. Like, it's not like English, where everybody speaks somehow some English. So native English people are so used to hear the weirdest accents, and they still kind of manage it somehow. Whereas in France, that's, if you don't speak like you should, then nobody understands you, basically. It's a little bit the same in Czech Republic. When you try to speak Czech and you can't make yourself understood because you don't pronounce it correctly, so, and people are not used to hear it, basically, so they don't get it what you're saying.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, like, I remember even in being in Denmark. I mean, I found my I learned Danish for about 2 years and a half. I mean, I have always take pleasure to speak Danish with a Danish person or a Scandinavian. But it's you try to break the ice, you try to make the first step, but sometimes it's very difficult because you try to make yourself understood, but then it goes out of hands because you simply people have just higher expectations than what you can actually do.
It's difficult. I mean, in Danish, I mean, you would probably survive better in Denmark than I would, because I struggle to understand Danish. Even when I read it, it's the same as Swedish, but I can't understand it. It's so difficult. Ah, great.
Don't worry. I mean, my Swedish, I can't really understand Swedish. I mean, I can read it. I'm okay with that. But when it comes to dealing a big conversation with a Swede, it's a big challenge for me.
Okay, thank you so much, Camille. What is next on your life agenda?
I must say, back in March, my partner left Russia, St. Petersburg, to join me in Prague. So it's very much about our life together. So definitely staying in Prague for a bit. It's going to be about... She needs to find a job here. I think it's going to be more about my more life together and settling down, and probably go back to school learning German, because I really would like to work more with the German speaking environment, and continue in the legal field for sure, in the international level.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Have a great
evening. Thank you
very much
for having me.
Thank you, Camille. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Corporate Corner. If you want to know more about us, read our blog and see notes about today's show and link to the podcast, go to our website, www.thecorporatecorner.net. There you also find links to our social media presence as well as means to support us. If you want to get in touch or share a corporate experience, write us at info@thecorporatecorner.net. We would love to hear from you. Have an excellent corporate week and talk to you soon.